know a number of the teachings of the church are vilified in parts of the secular culture, but probably none more so than the church's teachings on marriage and sexuality. I hear it all the time. The church is characterized in its sexual teaching as puritanical, as hung up, as life-denying, as advocating Bronze Age mythology of primitive desert people, all this business, you know. And when church leaders defend the sexual teaching of the church, they're often characterized as some version of Dana Carvey's old routine, the church lady, you know, sort of fussy and puritanical and secretly obsessed with sex and all of that. Well, how do we respond to this? The easiest part of that to respond to is the charge of Puritanism. To be sure, Puritanism is a very ancient teaching. You can find it in the philosophical and religious traditions of the world, both East and West. It would say some version of this, that the spiritual is good, the material is compromised or it's negative, and especially that part of the material that draws us most into the world, namely sexuality, is especially suspect. The program of puritanical systems is usually to escape from matter, escape from the negative, to get to a pure spirituality. Okay, as I say, that exists, East and West, but it's not biblical. Go back to the beginning of Genesis. We find God creating the whole panoply of things material, from planets and stars and moon and sun to animals that walk on the earth, fish that swim in the ocean, even things that creep and crawl upon the earth. God of the Bible, the God of the Bible, says all this is good, even very good. Now, the upshot of that is there's nothing in the world wrong with bodies, with sexuality, with sexual longing and desire. All these things in themselves are good, even very good. Look now in the New Testament when Jesus articulates his view on marriage, divorce, and so on. He harkens back to the beginning of Genesis. And he says that God made these bodies male and female, and that the two become one flesh. Now, notice first the focus on the word flesh. This is a Jew talking. Greeks might have had a hang-up about the flesh, but Jews didn't. More to it, the two becoming one flesh, say what you want about that image, that's a pretty sexy image. And Jesus himself puts that forward as the explanation of what God intends for humanity. So let me just underscore this. We are not talking here about a puritanical system. Okay, you make that point, then you say, well, then what differentiates the Catholic or biblical view from, let's say, the Playboy philosophy, which also celebrates physicality and sexuality? Well, here's the difference. Catholic teaching wants to put sexuality, which is good in itself, but it wants to place it within the wider framework of love. As I've said a million times, love is not a feeling or a sentiment. Love is an act of the will. To love is to will the good of the other. Catholic teaching is that not just sexuality, but all of life should be contextualized within the broader framework of love. Hence, for example, our business lives, think of our economic lives, they've got to be contextualized by love, lest they devolve simply into a crass materialism. Think of our relationships. They, too, have got to be contextualized within the framework of love, or they will devolve into something like manipulation. Even our play, our recreation, has to be conditioned by love, lest it devolve simply into a self-indulgence. Sexuality is no exception to this rule. It, too, good in itself, we're not Puritans, but it must be contextualized by love, lest it devolve into something simply superficial and self-absorbed. Now, you want to see the opposite of this. You want to see when Catholic biblical teaching is not being followed. Take a look at the hookup culture. I spoke about it just a couple weeks ago. The hookup culture that says, no, sex should just be enjoyed for its own sake in the most superficial way, divorced from any connection to love, commitment, relationship. All right, fine. But look at the effects of the hookup culture. Armies of young people suffering from anxiety, from depression, from a sense of hopelessness, and not even cognizant very often that their errant sexuality is one of the principal causes of their deep alienation and their deep suffering. Catholic teaching is sexuality belongs in the context of love. Now, take one further step. Sexuality contextualized by love, but then love, human love, must be further contextualized by the divine love. As Jesus talks about sexuality and marriage, he says, the two become one flesh, yes. But then he says, what God has joined together, we must not separate. Extraordinarily important, isn't it? That sexuality, relationship, marriage is not simply a matter of sexual attraction and love. It's finally a matter of divine providence. That God has drawn people together precisely for his purposes. When I was doing work in the parish full-time years ago, I would prepare a lot of engaged couples for marriage. And I would ask them the question, inevitably, why do you want to get married in church? And they would hem and haw a bit, but they'd usually come up with some version of, well, because we're in love. And I would say, well, I'm delighted you're in love. That's terrific, but that's not sufficient reason for getting married in church. They look at me kind of puzzled. But I'd make this point that you get married in church when you say to each other and to the people gathered there, and you say before God, we realize that our relationship is part of God's providence, that we were brought together by God precisely for God's purposes, that our relationship might become an iconic sign of God's love for the world. When you can say that, then you're ready to stand before a priest and stand before God and stand before the people of God and make your vows. Sexuality contextualized by love, love contextualized by the divine love. Now that's the biblical Catholic teaching on marriage sexuality. Life-denying? Hardly. Bronze Age desert morality? Give me a break. Hung up, repressive, defensive? Au contraire. It's rather a fully realized contextualization of sex which is seen as good in itself. That's the church's view. I'll make a last point. What we have today in our culture is a rampant Nietzscheanism. Now, here I mean the view propagated by Friedrich Nietzsche in the 19th century, that we are capable of radical self-creation. The Übermensch for Nietzsche, the Superman, is someone who's thrown off the shackles of God, thrown off the shackles of a restricting morality, and now is able to invent himself or herself. That view, which was in the high culture back in the 19th century, has certainly trickled down. And now almost everybody in the secular world is functionally a Nietzschean. Self-creation. The church does indeed stand against that. Because it stands for this view of sexuality, which is not self-creation, but rather self-realization through love, ultimately the divine love. See, frankly, I'm glad that in the midst of this culture, which has tens of thousands of advocates of practical Nietzscheanism, I'm happy there's at least one voice, the voice of the Catholic Church, that's calling for a more richly imagined understanding of sexuality. Mm-hmm.